and welcome back to the What the Fork Sunderland Review podcast. We are very delayed by our standards, but with international break on the horizon and the fact it was 0-0, we thought we'd take a little bit of an opportunity to have a chilled out Sunday before having like just a bit of a catch up, really. And bizarrely, absolutely everyone showed up to discuss not the greatest of games on Saturday as we drew 0-0 with QPR. And I don't know if we had a shot on target. I don't recall one, but regardless, we're all here to discuss it, and everyone's joined. I don't know which order I'm going to start in, so I'll go in chronological order for what's on my screen. Brad, first and foremost, mate, how are you? Are you okay?
All good, mate. Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Probably the most boring game of the season, if not the last two seasons, and we get a full house on the pod. I'm looking forward to this one, actually.
I said yesterday it was the worst game since Stoke at home on a Monday night, if anyone remembers that, which was categorically the worst game of football that ever existed. Ever, period. Next up is Ross Black. Ross, how are you? Are you okay?
I am good. To be fair, we'll probably need as many people as we can just so we can get like 2 minutes talk of the match out, because it was two absolutely awful teams of... It's like, I was creased. I put a tweet in, a screenshot of a tweet. Sorry, I don't know who it was from. I just seen it saying that it's hard to think that the Sunderland QPR game and the Man United Liverpool game is the same sport, because worlds apart. Absolutely worlds apart.
Apparently so. Dave, like I say, full house here to discuss a 0-0 draw. I don't know what I've done to deserve this love of everyone wanting to come at the same time, but are you well?
Great, mate. First time in about 6 weeks. We haven't been beaten, so that's why everyone showed up. I mean, what more do you want? Clean sheet. There you go, Bowers. Enjoy that, mate. 0-0, because I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think we got about 7 minutes in, and I was straight in the WhatsApp group saying, hey, I didn't realise there was a pre-season friendly on, because that's exactly how it felt. However, I'd take the big lump up front for QPR next season. Wouldn't mind them.
Nah, I would. I definitely would. It's funny, I don't know how this has happened, but on the forum, we've delved into people who have favourite characters on the podcast now. No one chose me, which is the correct decision, but someone said Dave is their favourite because he always sounds like he's suffering. And I'm pleased to let you all know, I think he is. Lee, a man who's not suffering, I don't think, apart from the football club he supports. How are you, mate? You okay?
I'm all right, mate. You got a beat, didn't you? You didn't laugh, you'd cry, wouldn't you? I'm married.
You can do both.
You could, but it's not really recommended, though, is it?
Like a laugh cry.
Aye, a laugh cry.
I don't mind a wee laugh cry, they're quite good. Not that I cry. Oh, no, I don't cry. I never cry. Here we are. Brad, 0-0, home to QPR. Like, literally, nought happened apart from Dan nearly chipped Asmir Begovic from about 100 yards out. So, first question, do you want to just, like, patch it off and talk about how lovely it was to see Ahmad score? Should we be forced to talk about the match because we're a Sunderland podcast? It's up to you. We'll go in your direction.
To be fair, mate, I was coming on here to talk about Ahmad.
The Ahmad pod it is.
I'm down in Peterborough at the minute, and I was in the restaurant having my tea and watching the game. And when Ahmad scored, I celebrated. I can't stand Man United, but I'm just a fan of Ahmad.
Are you a famad?
Oh my word! I was more fuming that Ahmad didn't come back out and celebrate after the game, and I was angry about us not turning up yesterday. If I want to talk about the game, you've just summed it up, really. Our only attempt was from inside QPR's half, which was where the action all was, really. Inside our own half, sorry. What else happened? Did we clip the bar, maybe, first half?
It was the game that, bet. Like, existed.
I tell you what, right? I've been very critical of him lately. I will say thank God for Anthony Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it out there, right? And that started first half when Dan Ballard I don't know what he was doing. And can I just say as well, if that was Luke O'Neill, Twitter would have been a melt. That would have been a melt. Like, people would have been slating him. So let's call a spade. Ballard was honking yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like, he looked untreatable now. I know there's a mitigating factor about his injury. But that pass was atrocious and he just got taught a bit second half. But yeah, I'm going to give credit where it's due. Thank God for Anthony Patterson, because, and also thank God that their strikers don't want to score, because it was an open goal and he's hit straight at Patterson. But granted, he's got to get back then, put his body in the way in the same second half when they put the ball in the centre of the box, and he saved it again. So yeah, I'll give credit where it's due. I've been very critical of him lately. He's kept us in that one. He's prevented it from being seven on the bounce. So yeah, that's about it for Potts.
Yay!
There's a lot when you're playing against a team fourth bottom and your man of the match is your goalkeeper, isn't it?
I can't even recall much from it, to be honest. I think on Ahmad, yes, that was great, but I suppose I better chat about Sunderland. There's a few people that, because I think the first time in a long time I kind of popped on my phone just to kind of look at my phone, because I got really bored of the game, if I'm honest with you. I think I was quite tired as well, because I got up at about 6:30 yesterday for the match. But like, I was really bored with the game, but there was a few people online afterwards who actually had like real positives about it. And I don't know if that's like just trying to find positives in the face of adversity, because I thought like Twitter would be a bit more like explosive, if I'm honest with you, and it kind of wasn't. It was a mix of apathy and some people going, well, you know, this was good, that was good and stuff like that. But so I suppose I better touch on it. I didn't really think I would, because for me, and this is just my own personal opinion, there was very little positives about the game. I thought Pato was really good. I thought one or two performances were all right. But largely, I think it looked like Dodgy mixing with the formation again, not knowing what they were doing, not having a shot on target, and really lucky to probably get a point from a really bad QPR team. But that, like I say, that's just my opinion, and there's tons of opinions about Sunderland. So I'll leave this one with you, Ross. People have picked positives out of it. What things did you find positive? It's our first point since February the 10th, I suppose that's one of them.
Well, I think Brad covered it well there. Patterson saved us, didn't he, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Ballard was clearly not fit.
Nah.
Let's be honest, if Luke O'Neill's fit, he doesn't, and Seals fit, he doesn't play. And right, he was just put in there because we literally had nobody else. Thought Daniel was good. He stood out. And I thought, if I'm clutching here, mind, at straws, because you say it wasn't that mental on Twitter. I think that was just pure apathy, wasn't it? And borderline delusion by some people, I think.
Some because people felt really positive and said that they felt I was being a bit negative, and it was, you know, some players played well and stuff like that. But I don't know, the way I viewed the game was like, at point, QPR wasted really good opportunities. We didn't have a shot on target. The formation, the players didn't seem to know what they were doing. I know we've got a lot of injuries and stuff, but like,
that's what disappointed me more. We're at home to a team fourth bottom. And we've played like we're going to, the stats would look like we're away to like top of the league. That's what let me down more than anything, to be honest. But didn't really have a go at all. To be fair, you can't really do much when you've got a striker who just doesn't fucking move. Like, I've given him here, like, his dues. I'm sorry for going on. I know I'm about trying to get positives, but like, he didn't move all game. But Aushish, I thought Aushish was okay. I think he had some all right touches, but again, I'm being very, very, very nice, I think. I just don't think it was a good game. It was two very poor teams, little quality on show, and that's why the likes of Patterson and Dan Neal, and that stood out.
I did think Aushish was all right, and I was talking about this yesterday at the lad next to us, Paul, and I think he's probably been not harshly tripped, but I think we kind of forgot that actually he'd been okay, because it felt like after that Ipswich game, he did miss a sitter and he did give away that free kick, and that cost us the game. And then, as we remember, Beale came out and kind of like threw him to the wolves a little bit. And then we haven't really seen him since. But he was all right before that. And he was all right against Leicester and coming back. And he's been okay. I thought I thought Aushish, if you're taking out Pato's saves, was probably our best outfield player. I felt Dan Neal played okay, but I think he had to do too many jobs. He was defensive. And again, I thought Job wasn't too bad, but I just don't understand how he can progress when he plays defensive midfield, then a number 8, and then a number 10, and then he plays up front all in one game. I think that would be quite hard in, like, game by game. But he seems to have to change position sort of every couple of weeks and during the game a couple of times. I don't think that really helps him at all. And I think it probably speaks to, and again, I don't think it's Dodgy's fault. I think he's in a position he shouldn't be in. But I think the consistent tactical changes and stuff like that, while some of it may be forced, I do think it shows he's a little bit out of his depth. Dave, you came up with a really positive stat last week that we beat Southampton on aggregate. We've definitely beat QPR on aggregate. 3-1, ironically enough. So that's a huge positive, Dave, isn't it? The aggregate score is that we've beat QPR on Southampton, and that's two wins in a row in one way.
Exactly, mate. Because I mean, if you think about it, when it gets to the end of the season for the playoff to who gets relegated to League One, we're staying up. So don't you guys who are listening telling me that I'm like always stressed and negative, because I'm sorry, but you know, that's two teams this year we've done over on aggregate. Leeds is no, we're getting beat 6-0 off Leeds. I'm sorry, everyone. I am not looking forward to Elland Road at any point.
I mean, you never know. I think if we go with the good, the bad, and the because I quite enjoyed starting with that last week and then going into the listeners' questions, because I think I'll go with my first. I feel like my is, I think that point's probably going to be enough to keep us up. I was worried a bit. I thought we might have gone into a spiral of like losing games, and then I go, oh God, what happens then? But I think that point, considering who it was against, is, I can't see any team catching us, to be honest with you. So that's my which is not really a massive positive, I suppose, which means that a lot of these...
It's not a massive positive. It's the most depressing positive I've ever heard in my life.
I think what I'm trying to like get at here, I had something in my head that I was going to say, and then like maybe ADHD brain took me off and went elsewhere. And I think what I was trying to say, if I just get back on topic of where my brain was aligned beforehand, is that I think every podcast for the rest of the season, assuming that my and my not massively positive is that we'll probably stay up because we fluked a point against QPR at home, who are fourth bottom. I think that a lot of these podcasts are going to be a case of, well, how does this look next season? What does this mean for next season? And it's going to be a lot of repeat. But yeah, I'll stop rambling. Brad, what was your good? I forgot to ask Lee. I'll come back to you, Lee. I haven't forgot. You're just at the bottom of the screen, and I was thinking, who's that at the bottom of the screen? It's Lee. I'll come back, but I've asked Brad, so for the purpose of not having to edit, let's pretend I didn't say any of that, listeners. Brad, what was your good?
What was my good? I'll stay on the topic like you have. I should have a laugh. That point now means we can't mathematically finish bottom.
Well, there we go. How did you work that out?
I seen it on Twitter.
Someone's gone to the hassle of doing that. Actually, you know what? No, I've changed my mind. Do you know what my good is this week? Lee, I'll come to you next, right? But my good this week, right, is coming back on the train. I was tired. And do you know when you get that delirious stage, which you might have noticed I might still potentially be at? Somebody put like a thread on Ready to Go, right? And they were saying about like the state of the club in terms of like the off the field stuff. They were like the toilets in the north stand don't have any hot water, and like he spoke to a steward and all this kind of stuff. And the fourth comment down said, the worst thing about today was, or something to this effect, there was the worst person thing about today was in the west stand. I went to the cubicles and there was The biggest shite I've ever seen in my life. And the flusher was broke, so it couldn't get flushed. So the person who did that, if you're reading, can you just chop it up next time? And it left me in a fucking state of fits of laughter for like the best part of about half an hour between about like Linlithgow and potentially Edinburgh, because I was just thinking of this bloke just looking at it being like, why wouldn't you just chop it up? That was my good. Lee, what was your good, mate?
That potentially the match finished at 10 to 5 and it was a 3 o'clock kickoff and we didn't have to wait all day for it.
It's true.
But now on the playing side, like I say, Patterson really, batteries form, batteries best. I was the only really standout in the whole entire game was Patterson, which is a good sign. It means he obviously hopefully shows he's getting back to his best. And as he's just insane, it was the only really positive I could say in my eyes because he stopped us from getting beat.
Well, Sheaf was all right. He was okay, wasn't he?
Aye, it was all right. As I'm saying, but like the rest of them was like, as you've already said, three, Poise, Neil, Aushish, and Patterson were the only three players that actually come away and go, I've done all right there today. I thought the rest of them were bang average. Like, it shows how far we've fallen, really, from where we were, like, even in the last season, beginning of the season, where we went to QPR, we and absolutely tonked them, to now you're sitting there going, oh, I'm pleased we got a point to stop a rot of defeats. And I see how, just going about me good, and I've gone to a right bloody negative.
Are they... So do you think that the performance yesterday was a metaphorical shit that at some point needs chopping up?
I don't think you've lost it, mate. Like, I think you've actually gone. I feel like this...
I think he has gone.
The travel yesterday and how bad the game was, you've just thought, you know what, I can't do this no more. You're on... It's like instead of a total mental breakdown, it's like a football mental breakdown. Like you've just had enough, and you're just done.
This is what this club has done to me. I never thought I'd be so delighted to know that after the international break, we can put Bradley Dack in a false nine and actually probably look a little bit better.
I said that yesterday. I said, "Would you put Bradley Dack in the team?" And I said, "Aye," because like. I just think any sort of experience would come in. But you're right in the sense, though, like, Ross, like, I'm having a laugh in that. But, like, it just got to the point where, like, I'm really questioning what I'm doing. Because I'm not just going to the game, which is, at the minute, a slog, probably because of the distance. And I'm not saying I'm loyaler than anyone else. Look, that's my choice. You go from where you go. But, like, obviously the 3 hours, you have that, like, 3 hours to think about on the way down and the 3 hours also to think about on the way back. And it's normally consumed by a bit of alcohol on the way there as well. I'm veering towards the heroin at this point, not going to lie. But, like, you sort of get back and you're just like, that was shit. Like, what am I doing? And then you think, you know what I've got to do? A podcast at 10 o'clock. You just think, what's the... Like, what do I say at this point? Like... Well, what was the positives? And it's difficult, man, at the minute. Like, it is... I mean, I'm always going to be Sunderland. Love Sunderland. But, like, it is tough at the minute. Like,
it's like... I put in the chat. It's weird. I've never seen a team regress so quickly. Like, on the pitch. Like, I know we've lost a few players to injuries and they are massive key players. But...
Yeah.
Even the individuals who are clearly playing very poorly now and not showing much at all, they showed so much more last season or at the start of this season and they've just regressed so quickly. And it's like a symptom within the team that the lack of leadership, the lack of any ideas, the lack of any quality around them has just sucked the life out of them. And the enthusiasm and the kind of like the carefree player that we had, even when we've been playing bad this season, we still had a threat. In ways, like, I think yesterday was the first time, I think, at home where we've looked genuinely like we didn't have a clue about what we were doing. It wasn't that we didn't have the players to do what we wanted to do. We genuinely looked clueless. And I feel like off the pitch, like Dodds and Proctor, I genuinely think now that this has got to be them done, because I feel like we've with them there, we're not going to get anybody in who like is going to do anything, let's be honest. I think we need a total reset now. I know I've pushed this on a bit, but I feel like we're at the point now where if we did this last season, fair enough, I'd be like, you know what, first season in the Championship, this is kind of what I was expecting last season. But it's the fact we've regressed, and to me, you stand still in football, you go backwards, and that's what we've done. I gave the model a chance. I was like, yeah, you know what, last season it worked really well, but I clearly took for granted the experience, the talent that the players we had within them. It also clearly benefited them young players and helped their performances. But now they've been kind of sold down the river, and I can see why everybody had trepidation now. I can hold my hands up and go, yep, I can see why that happened. But yeah, just to push it on a bit more, I think next, to me, the only way we go forward as a club is a total reset on the pitch. And if rumours are to be believed, then off the pitch too, because if not, we're in a really tricky position.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, be careful what you wish for and all that kind of stuff, and I get it. And I think there is a portion of the fan base that still is really like feel like it's the injuries, the fact that Ahmad elevated us quite a bit last season. But I think there's no real anger I've got towards the players or Mike Dodds or Proctor or anything like that. I think they've been sold right down the river by those further up. I think, you know, yesterday's performance for me was a symptom of, yes, injuries, but B, the way the club's been run for a long time now. And most importantly for me, the recruitment, which I've banged on about for a while, has been, it's left the players on the pitch, the managers in the dugout, even Michael Beale to an extent, without the tools, as Tony Mowbray said, to do the job that he thinks that they need to do. And it's really concerning for me, because I think I can accept sometimes poor performances on the pitch if I think what's going on above them has a plan and an identity. And I know some people don't think this, and you know, you're well within your rights to think that as well. I won't go over all ground. If you listen to this podcast at this point, I'd be surprised if it's the first time you've listened. I think people know my thoughts on it. I'm really concerned about what goes on above, across a multitude of reasons. And I think it goes back a fair while, to be honest. But there's a really good question on what Ross has done to bring that forward. We'll go into listeners' questions, which I'm just about to. And there's a really good question here, which kind of leads on from what Ross had said. I don't know yet on my opinion on this fully, but you might have a opinion on it, Brad. So one of the questions was really good. The club should let the new coach bring in his own people, even if that means getting rid of Dodds and Proctor. They should get the new head coach in now as well, if they've identified who they want. How much do you agree with that question, that statement, Brad? Do you think if, you know, we identify the manager that they want, they get to bring in their own backroom staff as well on top of that? Or do you stick with Dodds and Proctor in the coaching role, and, you know, maybe like Mowbray, who brought in Venus, and maybe like Alex Neil, who brought in Kanzo as well? Do you go down that route? Do you think that we need to gut everything out in terms of the coaching staff and bring in someone new and have a fresh vision? Or do you think we can stick with Dodds and Proctor and bring in a couple of new people, like a new assistant, a new manager, and kind of get back on this alleged road that we felt we were on sort of a year ago or so?
It's a good one, that. Personally, I think it needs a full reset.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's became now, I was a fan of Ben Dodds, and I take him at the end of the season. But now when I'm looking at it, I'm sort of like, became a little bit stale. I think people are starting to, I don't know, when I listen to Dodds, I hear a lot of Speakman. It's like Speakman's giving him a script and just say this. And he's highly regarded in his coaching. He's openly said he wants to forge his own way to become a head coach. Maybe it's just time for him to maybe go down his own route now and start in the lower leagues and show what he's all about, and hit the reset button at us. But that could come right from the top as well, mate, because if we don't get the summer right, Speakman's got to go. Well, for me, I'll keep him, but for me, I think it needs a full reset, because we're going to lose at least one or two of the best players. And I don't really trust what we've got at the minute to bring in the right type of player to push us forward. I think they might. There's a special thing where I say, like, managers, they say they've taken us as far as they can. I think Speakman's probably taken us as far as he can, which, look, he's done really well for us. But with the whole coaching team now, are we at risk of putting them back into their coaching positions, bringing two blokes in to head it all, and then we just become stale again? And a year's time, it's not going right with Sack, and put Dodds back in there, and we're back to square one. So for me personally, I'd shake hands with Dodds, say thank you for everything, and I'd hit the reset button and go again. It's not going to happen before the end of the season, as much as I would like to see this new the new guy come in. And I think it would only be right for him to come in and have a look at his players in competitive football to see what he's got and what we need. But yeah, in an ideal world, I would say, with no disrespect to it, because I do like Dodds and I do like Proctor, but I think a full reset needs to happen.
Yeah, I actually kind of agree with that. I think more you and you just spoke about that there. I do as well. I think when it comes even further up, I know some people, again, the grass is not always green, and other people think different, which is fine. But like, my head's been gone ever since the Black Cat Pot situation. Like, that, my head's gone since then, and it hasn't really changed. So one thing I would say is, if we did shake hands with Dodds and Proctor, and you know, they left come the end of the season, they wouldn't go from my side with any anger or frustration. I think they've largely done a pretty good job here, and just been put in difficult situations a couple of times that they probably shouldn't have done. But Leo, I'll throw the next one at you. I think it's, I don't know if it's a good question, and I think it's Rama that sends his questions in, and he sometimes comes in a different opinion that maybe I have, but I do like his questions, because the challenge, my thoughts, and the challenge, maybe the majority perception, and I get what he's getting at here. He's asked if, like, the fan base needs to, how much does the fan base need to improve if the team are to improve in the summer? And he's discussing about booing young players off the field of play. And I do kind of understand that. I thought it was poor that some of the young boys got booed off. And I have got thoughts on this, but, like, I want to not be the only person to speak on this on this episode, I guess, because I've gotten a bit delirious. But I think I know what he means from that perspective. But what are your thoughts on that, Lee? Because I think it's a question that maybe, because we tend not to criticise the fans anyway, shapes as a form. And I don't think I ever will, because I think everyone's entitled to do what they should do. But I kind of understand why booing the young players off would be seen as not great. And I do understand his point.
Yeah, he makes a valid point. I don't agree with them getting booed off in any way, shape or form. You could have a bad game and you can keep, like, obviously everyone's entitled to their opinion. They pay their own money. But regards to the fan, I think just the fan base just want the best, and we're not stupid. And when you see, we're not getting the best on and off the field. It's like, personally speaking, the worst thing we possibly could have done was finish sixth last season, because it heightened expectations, not just us, but every fan around, like, Sunderland fan around the world. And just say, in hindsight, if we finished 11th last season, I don't think the reaction would be as bad as what we would have been now, because we're sitting in the same place, like, for progression and stuff. Because it does look like we have gone backwards, which we have. I'm not going to sit there and lie. But regards to the fan base being better, I wouldn't say the fan base needs to be better, because we're still getting 40,000 in every week. And that's after six defeats on the bounce. And you guarantee the next home game, I can't remember who it is, after watching that dross on Saturday, there'll be 40,000 there again. I'd say his point's valid on booing young players off, because it does nothing for them. Regardless if they've had a good game or a bad game, it does now for them. But I don't know if the fan base needs to be better, if that makes sense. Because it's like, we turn up in our numbers both home and away. So there's not much more we can do. We just, as you say, Sunderland fans just call a spade a spade. And if it's not going well on the pitch and off the pitch, we voice our, the opinions get voiced. And I think it's just this season especially has just been one thing after and one thing after another after another after another, and fans are just getting sick. So you understand frustrations. But I don't know. I wouldn't say they need to be better.
I don't think booing a young player or the team off is the right thing. I really don't. But I think if I'm looking deeper into it, I think I can understand where or why it's happened, even if I don't necessarily agree with it. I think ultimately Sunderland is a place, and I know fans come from elsewhere, you know, such as myself and other fans travel from London and all over the shop. The German Sunderland supporters were over the weekend. But most of the people in that stadium, the majority will be from the Northeast. We know the problems that people have at the moment with money and with the cost of living crisis, and football, to be able to do that as a luxury. And you've got a lot of people who don't feel it's a luxury. They feel it's a duty, and they haven't really got like I could never not have a season ticket. I'm very lucky that I have the privilege that I can still have a season ticket without feeling like I'm completely out of pocket. There's some people who will put themselves out of pocket to be there. And they're seeing really clear and obvious signs that someone in that football club is letting them down, whether they believe it's the people on the pitch, whether they believe it's the people up above, whether they believe it's something different, someone in the dugout. And the booing and the frustration and the shouting comes from the fact that they've spent money to see this thing that they just love so much, they're so obsessed with, they want to do podcasts on, they want to do forums on, they want to do all these different things, and it consumes their life. And we're all mad for doing it. Every football fan's mad for letting it consume our life the way that it does. But I think if it was as straightforward as they were booing those players because they want to get mad at those players, and that's what they think would make them better, and they don't care about these people, I'd probably fully be against it and be like, yeah, that's bang out. And it still is, in a way, the wrong thing to do. But I can understand where it comes from, because I think Sunderland fans wear their heart on their sleeve that much, and they say what they think that much because of that, that sometimes you get a really reactive feeling within the stadium. But that comes from, I think ultimately that comes down from they want better for something that they love dearly, and I find it hard to criticise that sometimes. But ultimately, I do agree with Ram, and I'm pleased he's asked the question, because it's not something that I would maybe necessarily have gone on to. And I think ultimately, when it comes down to it, I get his point. It's not the right thing to boo the players, because I've said numerous times I don't think it's the right thing to boo the players, because I don't think it's the right thing to... I don't think it's their fault. We've got a fun one for you, Dave. Do you want a fun question, mate, before we go?
Yes, mate. And also, just before you quickly answer that, I just want to stick with this element of positivity from me, because I'm going to try and be a reformed character. but just throw me hat into the ring for a bit of backroom staff job if there's any going to Sunderland in the summer. So I've been having a look.
That's delusion, not positivity, mate.
So I was having a look, and I'm trying to think, with my ender being one of the more positively thought about players or forwards that we signed, and they reckon he's got like the most potential. I was having a look around European football of where we could send Hamir on loan. And anyway, Scotland, Division 3, Elgin have only scored 28 goals this season. So I definitely reckon if Harvey's listening or if Speakman's listening, if we send him up there, he might get a couple of goals, give him some confidence.
Is there with Hibs?
Like, no, I'm talking about Hamir. If my end is at Hibs' level, then you need to try and, like, he's one of the most positive signings, apparently. So we need to, like, translate that. So I reckon Hamir, Elgin, he's got in the bag.
It's a nice place, yeah. Elgin. Most importantly, good question from a fan here. Do you think animals like cats and dogs have regional accents?
Definitely.
I think they do.
Yeah, I definitely think they do, to be fair.
I think it would make sense. Ross, a serious one here. We've got 3 and a bit minutes left, so short and sweet, because I'm not paying for the premium Zoom. Apart from playing decent football, how do we improve the atmosphere at the stadium light, i.e. say stand-in, adult section, cheaper booze, move out the away fans? What because the atmosphere has not been great recently because everyone's sick, and I don't think it's helped by the fact that there's a lot of stuff out that isn't great.
Free
last
heroin.
Season, last season, the season was rotten, wasn't it? The times. Did he say heroin?
He said free heroin. Yeah.
Hey, not even just heroin. It's free. Not cheaper pints from to me all the way through. Get people in there. Safe standing, definitely. But again, I think like this whole atmosphere thing is a bit of a myth that oh, it's terrible, terrific. Like last season, at times it was fantastic. When we've got a team we believe in and we can fully see, like even this season, the Plymouth game, when you've got something that you believe in, you can see what's happening. The atmosphere will improve. And I feel as well, it's the disconnect this season between the fan base and the board. What's caused that? Like, to be fair, like you say, the flag displays and that, they're all on their arse at the minute for obvious reasons, which we'll not get into. It's a total different conversation. But, like, yeah, I think there needs to be a concerted effort for the people in the South Stand as well if they're serious about this atmosphere. You've got to do it, and you've got to do it properly, and it's got to spread around. Like, I remember back in the day when it was just the Southwest corner, and that was rocking. So, again, I think, like, if we've got something we believe in, and like you say, we've got the connect there, the fans will get behind them, and they always will. There's not many atmospheres out there in English football these days that are fantastic. It's a total myth. It's not the 90s anymore, unfortunately. But I think safe stand will be a good way of doing it. The whole the South Stand and safe stand will be very good. And that'll be a start and then a concerted effort between the fans in that area to, you know, properly go for it. And yeah, just bring back Edward Mitchell and just sing that song for Nightmares.
Yeah, I miss Eddie Miss You, me. I miss you. I do, Eddie. Lee, I haven't. Sorry, mate. I'm delirious. Like, I've left you out quite a bit. Is there anything you want to say, Lee? I was going to ask you a question, but we've only got a minute left. Like, are you all right? I'm sorry I haven't brought you in, but you've been bottom of my screen.
It's totally fine. It's totally. Put us on the spot here, Graham. Cheers, mate.
Well, you've
I mean,
it
would help if you change your name on the screen from iPhone to Lee so we know who you
are.
I
was rushing, Dave. I was rushing.
He's injured for a month, man.
That just sums up how bad the performance was and everything. That's been the highlight of the weekend for me. You saying that Russians out for a week. I'll tell you what, though, mind. Got to just as well. Can I just add?
You've got 20 seconds, so we can try.
Play the young lads. Play going old school. Play the young'uns.
Oh, play the kids. Play the kids.
Trail news.
Fucking choice.
Someone yesterday went, why have I got a season ticket for the under 21s? And it had me decked for ages.
Valid point.
Bye, everyone.
Thank fuck, it's international break.
This has been a mess.
I'm a Diallo.